Jesus never takes volunteers. Rather, he is the one who initiates discipleship.
Dr. John Pless, author of The Issues, Etc., Book of the Month for July, Luther's Small Catechism, A Manual for Discipleship.
Jesus is the one who confiscates the lives of those that he chooses through his word and makes of them disciples.
Learn more about this new resource, Luther's Small Catechism, A Manual for Discipleship, at issuesetc.org. I believe I was taught this way back in college at some point. I was given the distinct impression that Western civilization owed some of its most fundamental elements, things that we take for granted, to, well, not to Western civilization, but to Islamic civilization. And here it is again, the claim being made in this case in an Australian publication called The Conversation, What Western Civilization Owes to Islamic Cultures. It says a lot. Well, is this true? We do have, well, for instance, at least from the Arabic, we have our numerals that we use when we write out 1, 2, 3, 4. Does it extend beyond that? Does it go as far as this article claimed to reach virtually every part of Western civilization? Welcome back to Issues Etc. We're going to be talking about the influence of Islam on Western civilization. Dr. Alvin Schmidt, Professor Emeritus of Sociology at Illinois College, joins us. He's author of several books, including The Great Divide, The Failure of Islam, and The Triumph of the West. Dr. Schmidt, welcome back.
Thank you for having me again.
Where did this idea that is commonly heard, I was taught it, others have been taught it as well, that Islam greatly influenced Western civilization, where did that idea originate?
Well, that's an excellent question. I addressed that question, by the way, in the book, The American Muhammad, where I compare Joseph Smith with the founder of Islam, Muhammad, in fact. And if anybody's interested in having the book, it's from 2 page 104 and following. But the question is excellent, and let me say a few things regarding it. Up until about the mid-1800s, there was no doubt in Western literature about Islam not being a contributor to much of anything except a lot of violence. It largely began with a Frenchman by the name of Henri de Bouillon Villiers, who died in 1722. He wrote The Life of Mahomet, and Mahomet was the name that they used for Muhammad in those days. In fact, Mahomet is the Latin name for Muhammad, and that was commonly used for centuries. He wrote a positive spin and put a good face, if you will, on Muhammad, contrary to what history and the Quran dictate. Then you had, for example, shortly after that, a little later, Thomas Carlyle, the Scottish essayist, wrote a book on heroes and hero worship, where he also begins to admire Muhammad. Facts were actually totally ignored. Now, the question is, why did this happen? I argue in my book, and I still do, if the book's been out a number of years, that this was another example of the Enlightenment's influence. And the Enlightenment was not a pro-Christian movement, as you and I knew. No. And this was another way of belittling, if you will, Christianity and anything it might have accomplished in the Western world. And so this became popular. You had also at the same time Voltaire, the famous critic in France, who died in the late 1700s, who had written a play in 1741 that performed a six-act tragedy showing the fanaticism of Muhammad, or Mahomet again, as you would say in those days. Then a few years later, he wrote an essay praising Muhammad, totally ignoring what he wrote a few years earlier, and no longer saw him as an imposter. And by the way, that was a common way that Muhammad was portrayed, as an imposter. And so you have another example, who was Voltaire. And Voltaire was very much opposed to Christianity, mocked it and whatnot all, another product of the Enlightenment, if you will. And so it began to grow in minds of people. And what they sadly ignored was to read the original, the primary source, namely the Quran. Or if they would have gone to the ninth volumes of the Hadith, they would have found out that Muhammad was indeed not only an imposter, but a very violent man. I have mentioned to you in previous interviews, for example, on Islam, the 100-and-some violent passages that are in the Quran. These are never read. And why is, again, a very interesting question. Apparently, we are or have a lot of people who are inclined to put the worst construction on Christianity wherever you can. That is partly why I wrote the book, How Christianity Changed the World, 20 years ago. They're showing, for example, that Christianity was not what it's often portrayed as. For example, it's often portrayed as having fostered slavery, denigrated women. All of these are absolutely false. Yet the irony, as, for example, you have today, when Islam is admired and envied and that we should listen to it, we see on television, for example, the low status that women have when they are veiled and wear garments where the face isn't even visible. Can you and I imagine if Christianity did something like this? We would see it every 5 minutes as being very critical posture of Christianity. No, you see these pictures of women, and still we are now advocating in a lot of schools that they should pay attention to Islam and ask them to memorize the five pillars in public schools. They don't ask, and you did ask to have them say the Lord's Prayer or the Ten Commandments, all H would break loose. So we have that whole posture to this day that we somehow have to put a positive spin in Islam, contrary to what the facts say. And this is why, for example, in the quotation from one of the articles, it quotes, for example, George Bush Jr., as I call him, when he was president, that Islam is peace. Where do you find that? Obviously, you don't find it in the Quran, but this is the mantra that's being peddled today. It's propaganda, and it's anti-Christian propaganda. Christians sooner or later will begin to accept that indeed we have to be more tolerable to Islam. At the same time, take a look, for example, what we have going on now today in the Western world, the push for diversity, quote unquote. One of the worst things, and they don't realize the contradiction, to promote diversity is the last thing a Muslim would want. Diversity is the rank heresy in Islamic culture. They don't want diversity. They want total uniformity to the teachings of Muhammad as conveyed in the Quran. Yet when they advocate diversity and thereby give Muslims free exposure without ever criticizing, we are actually undermining our own foundation, which obviously in the Western world today, again, is sort of, well, pushed to the side. And we would don't. This is why you also had the massive migration going into European countries. In Germany, for example, in recent, the last couple of years, it's again, they're bringing in the Islamic culture, and therefore it is tolerated and even encouraged. But at the same time, it really means that the West is committing suicide, if I may say.
What do you make of some of the particular claims made in the conversation story that we were discussing a little bit earlier about the influence of Islam on Western civilization with regard to its literature and its basic ideas? What do you make of those?
Yes, obviously, there are some things that we have learned, not so much from the Islamic culture. By the way, that's another fallacy. When the article refers to Islamic culture, really it would be Arabic culture. You know, you never see the West referring to Christian culture. But when you're talking about Arabic, well, for example, the Arabic numerals, really not quite correct. You and I grew up in school learning Arabic numerals. It's really the Hindu-Arabic numerals. Because the so-called Arabic numerals, as we have been partly told incorrectly so, originated in India, not in any Islamic country or even an Arabic country. But this is another way how we tend to sometimes not really learn the actual facts of history. Yes, and by the way, the invention of a zero was not invented by any Islamic person. That came quite a bit later, in about the 7th century. But again, the person was basically of Indian origin. So, yes, we learned some things, for example, and adopted some things from Arabic culture, if you will. A great deal is often made, for example, about some Arabic, they call them Islamic philosophers. Well, whether they were Islamic philosophers or not, I don't know. They lived after Muhammad was born, so they might have been Islamic. For example, Al-Khwarizmi, the person who is often credited for having introduced the word algebra, he was a mathematician, and his name has been Latinized as Al-Khwarizmi, which we hear a lot about today, about algorithms. But he also wrote, for example, on the calculation with Hindu numerals in 820. So there's an example for that. Again, it was not Islamic. It was not even Arabic. It was Hindu primarily. So these kind of things need to be corrected. You also have, and there was an it was rather influential. Ibn Sina was his name. The Latin name for him was Avicenna. He was a polymath, meaning that he was knowledgeable in virtually all human areas of knowledge, who lived in the 11th century. He wrote a book on the canons of medicine. Yet some of our Western physicians in the Middle Ages did use some of his information. So you had a contribution there. You had another famous Arab, often called a Muslim philosopher, by the name of Ibn Rushd, or Averroes was the Latinized name, who also gave a lot of information in philosophy and so on and so forth. So there are contributions. I'm not denying or arguing those. But it's also interesting that back in 1300, a Dominican monk who lived for many years in Baghdad, which we today call Iraq, was very fluent in Arabic, lived there, as I said, many years, wrote a very critical book about the unique, actually, to put it in Latin, it was Confutatio al-Qurani, or translated, the refutation of the Quran. Ricardo de Monte was the Dominican monk's name. Luther, in 1530, happened to read that book. And Luther, when he finished reading it, he put it aside, essentially, and said, I cannot believe that this book can be accurate. There cannot be people who follow a religion this evil. And he's talking about that's what Ricardo portrayed, namely Islam. Until Luther, 12 years later, in 1542, on Shrove Tuesday, came across the Latin translation of the Quran that was produced in the 11th century, 12th century rather. And when he read the Quran, he immediately went back and wrote a defense of the book of Ricardo that he had dismissed as not being correct. In fact, he did it in a few short days. So he made an about-face. Again, he saw the literature that had been conveyed was false, and that Ricardo was correct in putting out what Islam really was. And this is why I say, when I hear individuals talking about, as George Bush did, a religion of peace, and the British Prime Minister Blair said the same thing a few years ago, these people have never read the Quran, and if they have, they're absolutely not telling us the truth. But it's politically correct today to say things that are favorable to Islam and unfavorable or negative to Christianity. And this is a modern, clever way of how Christians today and the religion of Christianity is, in a sense, being persecuted. And this will gain momentum. It's already gaining momentum. That Christianity today, for example, is not being tolerated. We see it, for example, in Washington, D.C., when individuals are being interviewed relative to some cabinet post or some other position. The moment they zero in whether the person has a Christian background or whatnot, and if so, he's probably not qualified. They would never do this for anyone with an Islamic background. So it's another very clever way that we have today that's actually denigrating Christianity at the expense of truth and accuracy.
Dr. Alvin Schmidt is our guest. He's Professor Emeritus of Sociology at Illinois College, author of several books, including The American Muhammad and The Great Divide, The Failure of Islam and the Triumph of the West. We're talking about the influence of Islam on Western civilization. We'll talk about the modern version of Islamic civilization after this. Nadia Bolz Weber calls for a sexual reformation in her latest book, Shameless. How does her reformation compare with the truths rediscovered during the 16th century Reformation? I've written a review of Shameless in the latest Issues Etc. journal. We'll send it to you for free. Just click the red journal subscription button on the right-hand column at issuesetc.org. In the Wittenberg Trail feature, Pastor Andrew Abraham details his journey from Catholic priest to Lutheran pastor. The free online Issues Etc. journal.
Many Lutheran pastors outside of the U.S. receive little or no seminary education. Luther Academy provides theological triage through conferences, books, and journals. Help support Luther Academy by making a tax-deductible donation at lutheracademy.com or call 260-452-2211. Serving Lutheran pastors to the ends of the earth. Luther Academy, 260-452-2211 or lutheracademy.com.
Essential exercise for the Christian mind. You're listening to Issues Etc.
The LCMS mission in Gambia is the Lutheran Federal Credit Union Ministry of the Month. During July, if you opened a Lutheran FCU loan to meet your financial needs, or if you use your Lutheran FCU credit card for a qualifying amount of purchases, Lutheran FCU will give you cash back and give that same amount of money to the LCMS mission in Gambia. Learn more at lutheranfcu.org. Lutheran Federal Credit Union. Good for you, good for the church. lutheranfcu.org.
Remember when education was about the fundamental skills of reading, writing, and arithmetic? And about reading great literature and studying history to give our kids a model for what it is to be a good person? Memoria Press's Classical Christian Curriculum offers that very model for your homeschool. Get $5 off your next order by using the coupon code LPR9. For more information, go to memoriapress.com. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.
We're discussing the impact of Islam on Western civilization. Dr. Alvin Schmidt is our guest. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. Issues Etc. regular guest Pastor Heath Curtis will be speaking at More Than Giving, a conference on stewardship, Friday, August 16th and Saturday, August 17th in Milford, Iowa. You can find out more at lcms.org/stewardship, lcms.org/stewardship. One of the things I've wondered, Dr. Schmidt, is for those who want to make the argument that Islam had this golden age in which it was producing great thinkers and philosophers that were having a wide influence in Western civilization, how do they attempt to explain the fact that in the 21st century, the 20th and the 21st century, and for centuries before that, Islamic civilizations, places where Islamic has held both social and political power, it generally produces rather stagnant cultures and civilizations, and it is not this kind of golden era of thinking and cultural production.
Yeah, another very good question. You see, they will never ask that question. And if you ask it, you will be turned off or seen as a bigot. They never asked that question. For example, Bernard Lewis wrote a book who spent most of his academic life, I don't know if he's still alive or not, if he is, he's in the mid-90s, wrote a book, What Went Wrong? Basically assuming in that book, which I argued in another publication, that there was nothing really that went wrong. Islam never really did have a golden age, so to speak. So he basically wasn't able to point out much to what went wrong. But what's interesting here, for example, is as that question that you asked, right? You and I know that there are about 7.7 billion people in the world's population today. 20% of that population is Islamic, but only 5% of scientific discoveries or inventions come from Islamic countries. You see the disparity right there. Islam has never really advocated scientific thinking. Yes, there were a couple of philosophers that we mentioned a little while ago, but those were summarily ignored. They're only put forth nowadays to the West, to impress the West. They're not put forward to people in Islamic countries to emulate and admire them and continue to build on what they wrote and philosophized about. So this is another thing that is really important to remember. And again, basically, we tend to believe and accept the fact that Islam wasn't indeed not a, well, it had a golden age, and somehow or another the West has not taken advantage of that or has perhaps even stifled it. A little while ago, I mentioned, for example, the turnaround that we had with Voltaire and the and Thomas Carlyle and so on and so forth. What is very interesting is that people tend not to want to look at facts of history. You and I know, for example, about James Michener, the man who wrote novels usually based on a state name. He wrote one of Hawaii. He wrote one on Texas. He wrote one on Alaska. He did intensive research on these books. But would you believe that back in 1955 already, he wrote and called Muhammad a saintly man who preached that slaves be set free? Unreal. You ask, have you not done any research on Muhammad in terms of reading the Quran and the like? He, too, was already captured in 1955 about putting a positive spin on Islam. And so they don't ask the question that you asked a little while ago, that, for example, if you look at actual results scientifically, industrially, and so on and so forth, the advancements of Islamic countries is not very pronounced. It lags behind every Western country. And as long as they follow the Quran, that will continue to be the case.
With only a minute here, Dr. Schmidt, what's a good kind of nutshell response when someone makes the often made claim that Islam influenced Western civilization and Western civilization wouldn't be what it is today without Islam?
Well, I would put the question slightly different. If there's any influence that Islam has on the Western culture, it's not much because of Islam, but it's because the West had an open enough mind to accept certain things that were acceptable. And the Indo-Arabic numerals, mathematics, and so forth is one example. That's how I would handle that. I think that's probably the most honest, historically accurate way of doing it.
Dr. Alvin Schmidt is Professor Emeritus of Sociology at Illinois College. He's author of several books, including The American Muhammad and The Great Divide, The Failure of Islam and the Triumph of the West. You can purchase these books at issuesetc.org. Click On Demand Archives. Dr. Schmidt, thank you very much.
My pleasure. Thank you.
On the other side of the break, Molly Hemingway of Fox News is going to join us. She has just co-authored a brand new book called Justice on Trial that catalogs the Brett Kavanaugh confirmation hearings. This is one of those moments of political theater and moments of political crisis that many of us will remember along with other great events in our life. The moment when we see a nominee to the Supreme Court of the United States defending himself from charges of sexual abuse and sexual assault. The accusers multiplied. What's the real story? We'll find out right after this.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Good Shepherd Lutheran Church in Collinsville, Illinois is happy to support the Christ-centered, cross-focused ministry of Issues Etc. Join us for worship, Bible classes, youth ministry, and other opportunities to grow in Christ. We have a Christian day school for children in preschool to eighth grade. We are located at 1300 Beltline Road. Call us at 618-344-3151 or visit www.goodshepherdcollinsville.org.
I'm talking with regular guest Dr. Ken Sherb about a new book by one of his former professors. Which one, Ken?
The late Dr. Kurt Marquardt, and the book is The Saving Truth, Doctrine for Laypeople.
You edited this book.
Yeah, the unpublished manuscript was among Marquardt's papers, and it is vintage Marquardt, lively, engaging, centering in the Christ who saves, with an apologetics chapter at the end.
You can find out more about Saving Truth, Doctrine for Laypeople at lutheracademy.com.